You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
The amazing Robert Cray here on Dana and Parks. I am a changed man. I am here to report. Went to the gym this morning.
Yeah.
Parked my car back in the garage about, 10 o'clock. Put the garage door down. Ain't nobody climbing in my garage now.
I'm glad to hear that, Scott. Mm-hmm. Glad to hear that you've come around to really just very basic principles of safety that have been around for hundreds of years.
Also paid attention to the weather forecast last night. Brian Busby was saying it was going to be 31, so I went and unhooked my hoses.
Okay.
And my neighbors. Everybody's safe.
Guess what? I don't have to do anymore ever.
Unhook my hoses?
Yeah. Touch anyone's hose. Mine, my neighbors.
I
don't have to do it anymore. You know what you don't have in a sprawling, lovely, maintenance-provided community? Hoses. I don't have to deal with it anymore. It's my favorite thing ever. Not doing yard work is my new favorite thing ever. But I'm glad. I'm happy for you.
Hello, Dan Weinbaum.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, we have a special guest coming up in a few minutes.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yes. Dana is very excited for this guest.
If you have not grabbed your family and sat down to watch Somebody Somewhere on Max, formerly HBO Max, with comedian and actress and singer Bridget Everett, you are missing one of the greatest joys in the history of streaming. And
there was a book by that name too, wasn't there?
Not related.
Okay.
There are so many Kansas City, KU, and K-State connections in the series.
You know, between Ted Lasso and Somebody Somewhere, we're like the hottest place on earth.
She wore, in the episode I watched last night, I'm almost caught up, and, you know, the show wraps forever. December 8th will be the final episode of the third season. And she wears a KU shirt in the entire last episode that I watched last night. I think it was episode 2.
But it's shot in Manhattan.
And all of the exteriors are shot in Manhattan. And we'll ask her that. How much of it is really shot in Manhattan?
And why are you wearing a KU shirt?
I think she has a history with both towns. But she, you know, when I went to Parents Weekend in Manhattan, right in the downtown square there, there's this gigantic cutout of Bridget Everett peeking out of the window. And I ended up getting in contact with the folks over at HBO. And I said, if you don't let her come on the program and let me interview her, I'm going to create a diversion and steal that cutout. And they said, okay, we'll have her call in toward the finale of the entire program.
You know, I have heard all about this
series.
Anything
to keep you from criming.
Thank you. It's just lovely, Scott.
I'm going to check it out.
I look forward
to visiting with her.
It's a unique show. I haven't been watching the, I don't think I've seen the second or third season.
It is the third season that just started. You will laugh. You will cry. There are parts that are gently not safe for children, but she puts everything out there, and I am just so fascinated by her, and her star has risen so quickly, Scott. In fact, I was within the last year scrolling around and came across a Comedians in Cars with Jerry Seinfeld, mm-hmm. and I click on it, and there's Bridget Everett in Jerry Seinfeld's car.
It wasn't until a couple of years ago, she was working still as a waitress in New York City.
Yeah.
She worked as a waitress in New York City. You're talking about her meteoric rise. She was working as a waitress in New York City for 25 years, waiting for her big break. She's got a beautiful voice. By the way, she's in a band called The Tender Moments. And when we get back, we're going to take the break early so we can spend more time with her. When we come back, it will be a song from The Tender Moments. Guess who else is in that band?
Who?
Ad Rock, a.k.a. Adam Horowitz from the Beastie Boys.
Very good. Yeah, she's an overnight sensation and, working on it for the past 25 years.
Her dad and her brother were both mayors of Manhattan, Kansas.
Huh.
It's so good.
She says her family is the Kennedys of Manhattan.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God, I love it.
So, anyways, she's going to join us here in just a few minutes. Her name is Bridget Everett. The show is Somebody Somewhere. It's on Max.
Getting ready to wrap. Ready to wrap for good. And Katie Warner just texted me today in a girlfriend's group text, and she said, what is everyone doing right after Thanksgiving? Let's all get together and watch this as the season draws to a close.
And oh, so the last episode is right after Thanksgiving?
It's coming up. December 8th, I believe, is the final episode. It's just...
I'm going to have to get on this bandwagon.
It's heartwarming. Huh. We'll talk to her when you come back. And also, she's one of my favorite people, and I am obsessed with getting her to come to town for Thunder Gong.
Oh, that's a great
idea. Because of her voice.
That is a great idea. She went to Arizona State University. I did a deep dive on her. On a scholarship for opera.
Yeah.
Opera.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite the voice.
So then. We will get with Bridget Everett from Somebody Somewhere on Max in just a moment here on Dana and Parks. I wonder if our next guest will recognize that song. Joining us on the KMZ hotline, we are thrilled, is Bridget Everett, actress. You recognize her from Somebody Somewhere on Max, and we are thrilled to have her join us on the show. Bridget, welcome. Thank you.
Hello, Bridget.
Hello. How are you?
I could pee my pants right now. I'm that excited that you are on the... I'm seriously that excited. And I wasn't kidding. I told our listeners this earlier. Scott and I both went to KU, full disclosure. And my youngest child just went off to K-State. And I saw a large cutout picture of you in downtown Aggieville, peeking. I think it was an axe throwing place or something. And I said to your creators and people at HBO, if you don't get her to call in and talk about this season three and the ending and all of those things, I'm going to create a diversion and steal that cutout.
I want to get one too, just so I can... You know, put it in my brother's house because I'm not even his favorite character on the show. But if he could get the cutout, he'll warm up to my character.
Who's his favorite character?
Joel, who plays my best friend.
Really, at the end of the day, Bridget, is it not just a friendship love story between you and Joel? It's a lot of things, but it's a story about friendship.
Yeah, that's the exact, you know, it's a lot of times, you know, you know, everything's revolves around a romantic relationship. And this is really about friendship. And when that is your person, you know, your soulmate is a friend. And so it's been really fun doing this for the last 3 years. I've just loved it so much.
Bridget, if you'll allow us the liberty, we're going to play just a brief snippet from Somebody Somewhere, and then we'll join you again on the other side. Okay.
Sounds good.
All right.
Hey, it's a little bit early to be doing that, isn't it?
It's 12:30.
Really?
Nice underpants.
Oh.
I lost my sister 6 months ago.
You know, I keep trying to go through her stuff and I get kind of stuck.
What are you here, huh?
Love you too, Dad.
So sorry about Holly. She was a few years ahead of us, right?
No, I knew I recognized you.
No, you didn't.
That's one of my favorite lines still, Bridget. I was putting that together and looking back at season one and the evolution. Can you talk about just the story arc as the star and the writer and executive producer and singer and all of the things you do without giving away the ending? It's been a beautiful arc that started from this place of loss and sadness. And it just grows. The friendships grow. And I think you've done a great service to everyone, showcasing characters and different people that maybe when people think of the Midwest, they wouldn't always think about a character like Joel or like Fred. And I think it's a beautiful thing that you've done.
Oh, thank you. You know, I think that, like, the show's about a lot of things. Like, it starts off, Sam, my character's kind of swallowed up by her own grief, and she meets Joel, who was in show choir with, and she doesn't remember him, but he kind of idolized her. And anyway, he kind of nurses her back to life. And that relationship is central to the show. And there's also Sam's love of singing, you know, my character is Sam, and then, you know, navigating tricky family relationships and also, like you're saying, the kinds of people that her life is populated with are, you know, part of the LGBT, you know, community and, you know, just kind of everyday people, her everyday people, the kind of people that I know in New York, but if I lived in Kansas, I feel like I would find, and we're just all people who want to love and be loved and feel safe and be happy and laugh and fart and all that stuff.
We like to fart too.
So, you know, it's maybe I grew up with three brothers, but I don't want to put it on them because I think it's funny too. So,
two questions about the city of Manhattan. Obviously, the show is set there. How much of the show is actually filmed there?
Most of the B-roll, which is, you know, like the beauty, you know, the shots between scenes, and we actually shot some stuff there in season two. I ride around a bike, I go in Aggieville and just kind of as much as we could get when we were there. We went, you know, I want like the business fronts, like Varsity Donuts and Vista Drive-In and like all these places that are very iconic to me, Rockabilly Deli, like places that you got to go to if you're in Manhattan. Call Hall, where you get the best ice cream in the world. You know, I wanted to show as much of Kansas as possible. So we made sure to put that in the budget, and we made our way to Manhattan, and we just shot as much as we could.
The other question I have, obviously the show is set in Manhattan. You did not go to KU, but you wear a KU shirt a lot.
Yeah, well, my parents went to KU, and one of my brothers did, and everybody else went to K-State. I'm the youngest of six kids, so it was kind of a house divided in that way. You know, I'm on a family thread, and it's still trash talking all the time. But I also think it's a good way. Sam, my character, lived in Lawrence for a while, and it's also a small way to kind of show how she doesn't really fit in, you know, because she's not wearing, like, purple and K-State colors and you know, she sort of she tried to find a home outside of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And then she eventually comes home and, you know, like somebody said season one, she's like, well, if she was in Manhattan, she's not going to wear a Jayhawk. And I'm like, that's not true.
That is. And it's not true for a lot of us, Bridget. And I've got a funny story. In one of the seasons, I think it was season two, you're wearing a Louise's West t-shirt from the original dive Louise's West.
And, that is a dive.
Oh, God. My apartment complex, like, roach infested when I went to KU. It was right around the corner. And so I popped in there during, like, parents' weekend or something. And I'm like, man, I need to get me a vintage Louise's West t-shirt. And I go up to the bar and I go, hey, I just need a t-shirt. And he goes, yeah, get in line. We have none. He goes, is this about somebody somewhere? And I go, oh, my gosh, you sold out all of their t-shirts.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. You know, that was my brother's. Brother Brock, who went to KU, that was his spot. And so, yeah, I wanted to put that in there for him. There's lots of little things that I do for my family. That's one of them. I pulled out a box of shirts that I got from the show. And I was like, oh my God, I got the Louise West shirt. So I was so excited.
It's so good. Let me ask you mentioned family relationships. Let's get back to the show for a second. Trisha, played by the amazing actress Mary Catherine Garrison, I think I'm just going to give you my opinion. In the beginning, I could not stand her, not as an actress, as the sister. I thought she was mean. She's short. She like I wanted to call her Karen, but like all families have kind of an interesting dynamic, right? And I think it's beautiful the way that relationship between the two of you has grown, and I've grown to like her.
Yeah, well, I think one of the great things about the show is my character, Sam, just grows. Her emotional growth is very slow. And Trisha is, you know, her sister grows up in the same household under the same roof, but she grows exponentially over the course of three seasons. And we didn't want to make her be the villain for the whole time. We wanted to see people changing and evolving like real life. And also, you know, in the show, their other sister has died, and you're kind of only experiencing Sam's perspective of that. And you don't really think about how Trisha, the other sister, might feel. And we learn about that as we go along. And I really love that about, you know, she's such an incredible actor, and she's so funny in this season. And I also just love showcasing her talent because she's one of my favorite actors in the world. So.
What is the name of Trisha's store?
The Tender Moments.
Yes, and I did not know this about you. You're in a band called The Tender Moments, and we came back with your song Thanking You. Ad Rock is in that band, is that right?
Well, he's a founding member. He was in it for like the first 5 years, and he's been on a hiatus since he had a kid. But he's been so instrumental in my life. He really encouraged me to like just be myself and kind of lean into things that were silly and funny Yeah, he's just an incredible guy. And yeah, so there's like lots of little things like that. One of the stores is Tender Moments after my band. And then there was another store called Poppies, which was my dog in a store called Freddy's, which is my mom's name. You know, we kind of.
I love the nuggets. I love the little nuggets that you put in the show.
Yeah.
Bridget, talk about the music, because it's woven throughout the show. It was woven throughout your life. What has music given to you?
Well, music and singing is the great love of my life. It's everything to me. And you know, there's a central relationship of Joel, of the best friend, but the other one is Sam and how she relates to the world through singing. So it's a big part of the story, and it's a big part of who she is, and it's a big part of who I am. So I wanted it to be in the show. I think, like, not unlike Sam, when I sing and when Sam sings, that's when we feel the most alive, most connected, and the happiest, most fulfilled.
Well, I'll say, I mean, everybody's familiar with the show. I was unaware until earlier today that you were in a band. And I did a deep dive on Bridget Everett earlier today, and you went to college on a scholarship to Arizona State. I believe opera was part of your scholarship. And I know you probably get sick of hearing this, but I listened to your song on Spotify. You have the most incredible voice. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Singing is, that's my first love. I love it so much. And that's kind of, I was hustling for a lot of years. First it was in karaoke bars, and then it was in the clubs, and then it was in bigger clubs, and then I was touring around. And I did that for a very long time before I found myself in a TV show. So, you just keep sticking it, doing what you love, and then hopefully it'll keep leading to bigger and better and greater things.
Well, your rise has been meteoric, and no one is happier than we are all here back at home. I just have loved watching your career grow, and we cannot wait to see what you do next.
Thank you.
There's a sadness that this is coming to an end, but it was so beautiful and such a gift while it was happening. Is there sadness for you, or are you, you know, the kind of lid is being put on that and you are moving on to a next project? Like, how do you unpack that?
I'm trying to move on. It's hard. This has been the best experience of my life, and I think about it every day, and I hope that there's some way we can revisit it in the future. But for now, I'm just enjoying talking to people about it, and it makes me so happy that other people, the people have seen it and they're finding it and that they love it. And, I'm always happy to talk about the show. So, you know, anytime, hit me up.
Well, Bridget, between Somebody Somewhere and Ted Lasso, we're like in the hottest region in America. But
you are, that's right.
But, you know, when Ted Lasso ended after three seasons, there have been rumors that there might be a fourth. Any chance of a fourth with Somebody Somewhere?
You know, there is a petition on change.org. You didn't hear me say it, but if you want to sign it and you want to tell your friends, you know, God knows what can happen. But for now, we're at a stopping point. But, you know, if the public demands it, what are we going to do?
Exactly.
you have to give the public what it wants.
That's right.
Well, Bridget, you're a delight, and we're just thrilled to watch your success and the show and the music and everything. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. So happy to talk to y'all. We'll see you
Be
in
well.
Kansas one day.
All right.
Be well.
Look forward
to
it. That is Bridget Everett, the star of Somebody Somewhere. You can see it on Max. Story here from Channel 41. The NFL has issued a security alert to teams amid recent burglaries of the homes of athletes, including those of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, according to a report. Citing a memo that he obtained, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero reported the news on Thursday, today. Pelissero reported that the memo was sent to the NFL Players Association and to team security directors. Yesterday, the FBI confirmed it is working to determine if a transnational crime ring from South America is responsible for the burglaries at Mahomes and Kelce's homes. Law enforcement say they've yet to pin down any suspects as the probe into the crime continues. The Mahomes home was broken into shortly after midnight, October 6th. Kelce's home was broken into about 7:30 p.m. on Monday, October 7th, not long after the team kicked off its Monday night football game against the New Orleans Saints. $20,000 stolen from Kelce's home. It's time to get some security personnel over at your house every time you're at a game, no matter what.
For every player, if they don't have it already. We might bring this back as a topic later if we can get the Overland Park Police Department to phone in. I don't know, because of the nature of the investigation and where they're at, that that's going to happen. I do want to mention, thank God, the Overland Park Police Department, I believe within 48 hours, has arrested a suspect in the rape of the woman in her home near 95th and Neiman.
Well, the picture was so clear. I don't know how long could it go before this person was identified.
Here is the update. The Overland Park Police Department, with assistance from Kansas City, Kansas Police, Scott, arrested the suspect last night in that case. It has been referred to the Johnson County District Attorney's Office. New Overland Park Chief Doreen Jokers thanked the community, department members, and various agencies for their help. Said it was a collective effort to ensure the safety of our community. The victim, as we mentioned yesterday, who did not know the suspect when he came into her home in the middle of the night, is said to be recovering. Again, there has been an arrest. And at the second we can release and report some of the details that we know about that, we will let you know.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye on the email for sure. Story here from NBC News. JonBenet Ramsey's father still clings to the hope that his daughter's killer can be caught, saying today that he welcomes new pop culture attention on the nearly 28-year-old killing. John Ramsey, who is now 80, said advances in DNA technology can help police in Boulder, Colorado, take a fresh look at the murder of the 6-year-old girl that garnered international attention around Christmas 1996. He was on the Today Show this morning. Quoting here from John Ramsey, "So we want to keep the case alive and in front of people. I believe it can be solved if the police accept help from outside their system. That's been the flaw for 25 years. Ramsey was joined by Joe Berlinger, the director of the upcoming Netflix docuseries Cold Case, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey, which comes out next week. While the JonBenet murder case is seared into the minds of Gen X and baby boomers, Gen Z and millennials might not be as aware. Quentin, have you ever heard of JonBenet Ramsey?
This is so
I have not.
Crazy See? That this just came up. This so, you know, I have a library at home.
Wow.
Like, and I got this new library case, like a barrister's bookshelf for all the books that I've amassed for the girls, mainly. And the boys, but mainly the girls.
Yeah.
So Sophie comes over the other night. And she puts a book back in the library, takes another book. She's like, what do I want to read? What do I want to read? And I'm kind of looking over her shoulder and I go, oh, Perfect Murder, Perfect Town. And I pull it out and I go, JonBenet Ramsey, I mean, hello, I mean, here. And she looks at me.
Never heard of her.
And says, who's JonBenet? And I go, what? What? So she had wanted to take another book about nurses in Vietnam, not the women, another one. And I go, great book. It's called If I Perish. Read that later. You are reading Perfect Murder, Perfect Town.
Never heard of the case.
Never heard. I go, I'm sorry, one of the most notorious unsolved crimes in American history. Blank stare.
Hang on. How Quentin, how old are you? 20 what?
I was born in 99.
So you're 25?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to name a couple of names, and you tell me if you've ever heard of them. And this, I'm not trying to embarrass you. I'm trying to show the generational divide between Dana's and my generation and yours. So I'm going to name a few things. You tell me if you've heard of them. Okay?
Go ahead.
O.J. Simpson.
Obviously.
Okay. What do you know about him?
Well,
that he decapitated his wife.
Yeah. I mean, when he was talking about writing a book, If I Did It, you know.
Right.
Yes.
Do you know he was a football player?
Yeah, he was
player?
A Bills running back. He was very good.
Heisman Trophy winner?
Yeah.
First running back to ever get 2,000 yards in a season?
Yeah.
Okay. Rodney King.
Yes.
You know Rodney King?
Yes, I know of Rodney King.
What do you know of him?
The name really comes to mind. I don't really know. I don't think I could tell you like any details of it, but I'm sure if you started to run through them, I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Okay. Susan Smith.
No.
You've never heard of Susan Smith?
No, that is the most generic name possible.
Because, Scott, think about it. Once the perpetrators of those crimes go to prison, it goes away in the news cycle until someone's knocking at the door wanting to get out on parole. Thank God she was denied yesterday. With the JonBenet Ramsey case, what surprises me is I even brought up an image, like the iconic, I will say infamous image of her in the pageant, the one that is on every, you know, documentary cover.
Right.
And I showed her the photo and Sophie goes, yeah, no, I don't know who that is.
Well, then
how have they not solved that crime?
Because they probably screwed it up in the beginning.
Oh, without question. Everybody walked all over the inside of that house.
So,
Dad brought the body up from downstairs. Like, yes.
Did they ever find, I don't remember the answer to this question, so I'm going to ask it. Did they ever find any unknown DNA in that basement that they were able to save?
There was one sample of an unknown male DNA that does not match any suspect or any family member or anyone. They swabbed everybody.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, that crime scene was so contaminated. I've always thought that could be trace DNA from a lab tech. Yeah, it could be anything, mm-hmm. Scott. The crime scene was just bungled from the outset.
Well, maybe John Ramsey's right. Maybe this will be the bridge, this new docuseries, Cold Case, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey, comes out next week on Netflix. Maybe this is the bridge they need to keep the case alive.
I hate to deep dive, but I will remind everyone that that ransom note that was how many pages long that was left in the kitchen and written in the kitchen from a notepad in the kitchen and a pen in the kitchen.
Yeah.
They recreated how long it would take to write that rambling, bizarre, quote, ransom note. And I would have to go back and look it up. Even if you, on the first try, wrote everything out almost as fast as you could,
yeah,
it was 16 minutes. I mean, it's just something insane where authorities have said there is no way a stranger in the middle of the night who has assaulted and murdered a child in her own home is going to go down to the kitchen and grab a notepad right there off the counter and then for 16 minutes write this bizarre ransom note. Remember they said, we are with a foreign faction?
Yes.
And they demanded a very specific, bizarre amount of money that just happened to be the same amount to the penny as the dad's Christmas bonus from where he worked.
That's right. Wasn't mom
That note
rumored to be a
suspect?
Was
written inside of that house. It doesn't mean they killed her, but that note was written right there in that kitchen. And there is a suggestion that mom wrote the note. They could not exclude her handwriting.
And she's since passed.
She has since passed. Doesn't mean they killed her, but I think they, in some sort of panic, somebody in that house wrote that note.
So the ransom amount requested was $118,000. John Ramsey, dad, pointed out to police first on the scene that the amount was nearly identical to his Christmas bonus the year prior, which suggested that someone who had access to that information would be involved in the crime.
Let me look up how long. I am obsessed with that ransom note. How long would it take to write the JonBenet ransom note? I'm telling you, this, the whole case hinges on that note. 21 and a half minutes.
So, nope, no.
And remember, they X'd it out. Because, you know, when you press your ballpoint pen, mm-hmm. to, you know, there's an impression left.
Right.
There were a couple of attempts before the final was written. 21 and a half minutes. There is no perpetrator in the history of the world that is going to commit a crime like that. And then just sit down while the family's sleeping upstairs for 21 minutes.
Wasn't this on Christmas Eve?
Yes.
What was JonBenet doing in the basement?
They don't know. Mom and dad say the last time they saw her, they had put those kids to bed. And then they went to sleep, and then they woke up the next morning and couldn't find her.
Oh, it was on Christmas night that she was murdered. Huh.
I'm telling you, the key lies within that ransom.
Absolutely. 913-586.
Foreign faction.
Seven,
who says that?
Seven,
no, that's
seven,
not even a words anyone uses.
913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. All right, we've gone down a complete rabbit hole on this JonBenet Ramsey case during the commercials, and we found the letter that was written by the killer, and I'm just going to read it to you. It's bizarre, to say the least. Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, misspelled, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you be rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence
what?
An earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter.
Who was already dead in the basement,
correct,
but keep going.
You will also be denied her remains for a proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but we warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It is up to you now, John. Victory. S-B-T-C.
It would have taken someone 21 and a half minutes to write that inside the home where that child already lay dead in the basement. I had forgotten this. The ransom note was found, I think it was on the stairs. And Patsy came down that next morning, saw the note on the stairs. They freak out. They call 911, all of those things. They did not find that child until 7 hours later.
Right.
And 7 hours. So that entire time, people were allowed, friends, family, police were just traipsing all over the house.
She was in a room in the basement, and it said that there was a police officer that was looking through the basement, but for whatever reason, he was looking for an exit, how the killer could have gotten out of the house. That room did not have a window or a way out, so he didn't go into the room.
Yeah.
She was inside, on the other side of the door.
I do think... What concerns me is they're hanging their hat on this one thread of DNA that they found that has no match. The odds that that DNA belongs to the killer and not any one of however many people contaminated that crime scene, Scott, I think it's very, very slim.
Didn't you say that the day after the murder, John and Patsy and their son Burke tried to leave the town?
Oh, almost immediately. I think they wanted to get on a jet and get out of there for, you know, family safety, or they didn't know what had happened. And I always found that to be odd.
There was no forced entry into the home either.
Nope.
And whoever killed her knew that John Ramsey had received a Christmas bonus of roughly $118,000.
Very small number of people that would have known that number.
They would have to be very close to John Ramsey. The note is bizarre. It's beyond bizarre.
I think it's a red herring. I really do. And again, it doesn't mean I think they've cleared the family of any wrongdoing. Okay.
Yeah.
They've long said that they screwed that up, that they don't think it was the family. But I do think once she was found, like, it's possible that someone in the house panicked and wrote that. Like, I don't know why, but panicked and wrote that note and to try to – I don't know why.
It says here one theory is that Patsy, mom, who's now dead, struck JonBenet in a fit of rage after a bedwetting episode and strangled her to cover up what had happened after mistakenly thinking she was dead.
That's long been a theory that it was an accident, and then the cover-up led to where we are today. But, Scott, I don't think a new docuseries is going to get to the bottom of it. You know, that house has been bought sold, bought, sold.
Oh, I wouldn't buy that house. Too many looking.
Several times.
I bet people drive by that house all the time.
Yep.
Well, there's the house where ChonBenet was killed. Quick break. Dan Weinbaum has the news coming your way in 2 minutes. Hey, don't forget, if you have time, if you're willing, if you're able, we are collecting money right now for Coats for Kids 2024. We have an ambitious goal of $60,000. We're hoping to buy between 2,000 and 3,000 new coats for children here in Kansas City who, for whatever reason, don't have a coat when they go to school in the winter. And you know how cold it gets around here. If you can donate, go to KMBZ.com and click on the Coats for Kids tab or text KMBZ Coats, one word, to 44321. Special thanks to our partners at Operation Warm and, of course, our sponsors at Pinnacle Bank.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.